Welcome to Focus on Fuels, brought to you by StoneX. Your hosts are Trevor McClanahan, Risk Manager, and Alex Fodes, Director of Market Strategy from the StoneX Energy Desk. Alex and Trevor help fleet managers, fuel buyers, and energy procurement specialists gain control of fuel costs, boost margins, and keep their businesses competitive. Join them for another deep dive into the volatile energy markets.
Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Focus on Fuels. I'm your host, Alex Hodes.
And I'm Trevor McClanahan. We're going to give you guys updates on what's driving the energy market today. It's been today is June 3rd. 2026, it's 2:30. Even the timestamp matters right now with how fast the moving, all the news and headlines are. Oil prices today are moving up again. We're up about $2 on crude and about 15 cents on diesel. Our Bob is actually pretty flat on the day. So still a lot of price action right now, and prices have definitely been scaling higher in the last 3 days here. So starting the month of June off on the upward trend, what are you seeing out here, Alex?
Yeah, so May was really kind of a sideways, and to end the month, we saw one of the biggest sell-offs during this whole crisis. A lot of that, the headlines were kind of driving that, or so everybody kind of is attributing that sell-off to. There were supposed progress made between the U.S. and Iran. And then recently we've kind of seen flare-ups in Lebanon as well in Israel. And Iran's really kind of stated that as long as that's going on, that they're not going to really come to the table with regards to any peace deals going forward. And honestly, to kind of just like take a zoom out from those everyday headlines, in my opinion, I think a lot of the weakness we've seen in May has been driven a lot by kind of some of the destocking efforts from China specifically, and Asian buying just kind of taking a back seat. So reports already are that the imports in May for Chinese crude oil were down 4.5 million barrels from the previous month. So that's a huge step back in demand from the largest importer in the world. So even with that, you know, we were at $100 per barrel on WTI, and then ended the month around $90-$92 per barrel. So it's definitely a large portion and is kind of making a dent in the deficit that we're seeing. And I think a lot of that, the reduction in Chinese buying has kind of cooled off the market a little bit. You saw some of Saudi Arabia's OSPs were actually lowered from the previous month or even held steady. and usually when you see that, that tends to be kind of a reflection on the expectations of demand. So really that's just, and because China doesn't really put out their strategic petroleum reserve numbers, it's kind of a guessing game right now, but a lot of their demand numbers, their traffic indicators, high frequency kind of mobility data was all kind of pointing to kind of steady demand, honestly, outside of you saw a drop in refinery run rates. And so that kind of leads you to believe that they're drawing down on inventories.
Yeah, absolutely. Morgan Downey, author of Oil 101, he's actually got a website out there right now, and you can actually read that book for free online. But he has a shot clock on the global SPRs, and basically, you know, he's anticipating a run dry date is kind of what he's describing it as. You know, I take a lot of stock in this guy. I think he's definitely a very well-informed energy analyst out there. And he's looking at July 7th as kind of the breaking point for global SPRs, China being the major player in that. As you said, you know, we don't have very clear data on exactly how much SPR they have. They're probably the biggest player as far as they definitely are the biggest player as far as how much they have. U.S. SPR stocks have dropped a ton as of recently, and European SPRs have dropped significantly as well. So he's monitoring all those and kind of keeping this shot clock on what the breaking point of the oil market to some degree. That's kind of been the Band-Aid over this bullet hole that we've been dealing with the strait being closed. And as of recently, you know, the headlines have clearly been driving the sell-off that we've seen back in late May. President Trump has honestly done like a really impressive job of talking the market down. And the ceasefire obviously has been the main driver of that. But now things are kind of starting to get a little bit more heated up today. We've seen headlines in the morning coming in the office of Beirut and Kuwait both getting attacked by Iran, and then the U.S. Hit Kesham Island as well. So some responders there that they were attacking. So
that doesn't sound like peace to me.
Yeah, I know. It's a weird ceasefire,
yeah.
Right? There's a bullets being fired in a ceasefire. So whether or not it's a fragile one, of course, as we know, there's been a lot of reports, especially from Iran's side, that have basically said that conversations with the U.S. and Iran have basically hit a stalling point where they're not even talking anymore. And then President Trump comes out and says, no, we've been talking pretty much every day. And I think that you can look at both motivations of both sides. The motivation of both sides, obviously, President Trump wants oil prices down, so he's going to like remain optimistic on his messaging constantly. Whereas Iran wants oil prices higher. That's ultimately what's going to break the global economy. So they want to inflict kind of fear within the market to some degree. So they're going to continue to, you know, leak out things. And it's kind of reading between the lines as market traders and being in this world every day. It's very difficult to kind of determine what's good information and what's bad. We're following just about everything that's coming out, though, and it's the market is reacting to all of that, and you see massive swings in both directions. So, the main thing to understand is it's going to be really hard for us to do like a really strong outlook with a lot of conviction. Anything further out than probably, 2 or 3 months, I'd say, just because it's evolving so quickly. But at the same time, you know, there's plenty of technical indicators right now that are staying very strong and true. And like I said, with this Morgan Downey website that we have, that he's showing kind of the run dry rate, like I said, on the SPRs. I think that's just a really good thing to kind of monitor. And then, as all the headlines are coming through, that's a lot of noise, right? But if you kind of remain focused on just the fundamentals of the SPRs, the global inventories, along with the technical analysis that's coming out, that still stayed pretty consistent, we can still evaluate the short term in a pretty solid way. And right now, I think Alex and I, we've talking offline, and we remain kind of bullish right here.
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to be bearish in the face of a 9 to 12 million barrel deficit on a daily basis. Depending on what you see, what those numbers are, but the strait remains closed. There were some tankers that were allowed through in, I think, the 20th of May or kind of the third or fourth week of May. So you saw a few tankers go through there, but just to put that into perspective, I mean, prior to the conflict, there was like 80 to 100 tankers on a day passing through the ships or passing through the strait. So it's a substantial drop there. Another thing that's kind of been cushioning the market, and I guess one takeaway here is the sentiment in the market is, it seems like everybody's all on the same page of like, prices should be higher. Like, why are they not higher? And then, like, now that you're seeing, you know, people keep warning of, you know, $200 oil, and then you're not seeing it. I think some there's some complacency there in the market with regards to, oh, this is going to all be figured out. Oh, midterms are coming up. The U.S. administration is going to do their best to handle this situation prior to then. And thus, you know, there's not really that big of a upside price risk. And I think that is where some people are very mistaken, because I think even with the Strait, looking outside the Strait, which is kind of crazy because that's just the overwhelming kind of market surplus deficit. That's where the balance lies, and that kind of dwarfs almost everything else. But in the background, looking at some of the flows from Russia from April to May was kind of surprising to me, because there was quite a bit of a large drop according to loadings from Russia, almost a million barrel per day deficit from April to May. So, and that was due to some of those infrastructure attacks. And we're also seeing drops in diesel exports as well from Russia. So, I mean, that is just another factor that's kind of tightening the global market even more, especially with the grades of crude that Russia's really a great substitute. It has some grades of crude that are great substitutes for Middle Eastern crude supplies. So that's just another one of those kind of, you know, kicking a man while he's down, because that's just tightening things a little bit further than you would expect. So looking at kind of the U.S., we have started to see in those SPR drawdowns kind of tick up higher, more aggressive. In today's report, we saw a total crude oil inventory drawdown of, I believe, 16 million barrels when including the SPR, which is just a massive amount. And you're seeing those barrels sent abroad as well. U.S. is still ramping up its exports and kind of trying to fill the need of the global market. And what that eventually will do is, once we start to actually aim towards that lower end of tank bottoms and crude oil, refiners are going to have to compete for those barrels in the Gulf Coast prior to, or outside of sending them abroad, or, you know, people abroad are going to be starting to bid up WTI a little bit more. So it's just, with this ongoing shortage and the U.S. being the supplier, we are going to see kind of swings of this market back and forth. Exports kind of took a little bit of a dip in some of the refined products this past week. And you're seeing some of the Gulf Coast diesel pricing take a breather somewhat. So, you know, with ships going out, and that being, that's kind of a big swing with regards to pricing, you're going to start to see domestic diesel prices have to compete more so for product. And that's going to just, in effect, we got to meet in the middle somewhere of diesel prices at home have got to kind of move higher. Gasoline prices, we haven't really seen. We started to see inventories draw down. We were near the five-year minimum as of this past week in U.S. inventories. We saw a build in inventories, but really that's kind of a seasonal expectation at this time of year. And so that's going to be kind of the gasoline side of things has been a little bit looser than diesel overall. And diesel's kind of been, you've seen exports of diesel really kind of ramp up quite a bit. And diesel still, in my opinion, remains a little bit more bullish. But as we enter kind of the demand season of gasoline, you're going to start to see just kind of some seasonal strength there in RBOB specifically. And this is where, in my mind, the real downside risk that exists in the market this late this summer or fall would be if you see gasoline prices start to go crazy, because that's the one that is more politicized than anything else.
Yeah.
So I think, and Trevor and I were talking about this a little bit, but the big, big downside risk, and in my opinion, one of the, I don't want to say the only downside risk, because obviously the Strait of Hormuz opening back up, but I just don't see that as being likely in the near term. But an export ban on refined products or limitations on refined product exports, or some type of quota, something to kind of limit that price increase, is one fear for a downside ahead. And that's something that I think people should definitely think that it's a possibility. But in my mind, you don't get to that level unless you see prices go up higher before then. So
yeah,
I think maybe Q3, we should see more strength in the gasoline and diesel refined products overall. And that might be, you know, fall could be the time when you're seeing kind of a risk for that export ban.
Or late summer, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, late summer, early fall.
Honestly, it's more, like you said, I think it's going to be a response to whatever the price is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to be ahead of midterms. Like, that would be the goal of it, right?
Yeah.
Is to try to win some voters back at that point. But I'm with you. I think the diesel is kind of the one that's the bigger fear in the near term. And it's what we talked about earlier this year was, you know, diesel stocks were already relatively low, and we're just kind of tightening that those stocks even more, and it's just a more sensitive market naturally. And then, as you said before, all these Russian issues that are happening as well. Russia's a massive diesel producer. So them having issues is just, you know, it's compounding on itself over time. So definitely not a great picture to paint on the diesel side. I could see, you know, the crack spread on that, the margins on diesel expanding in a big way in the next couple months. And not only that, but it's a little bit less demand responsive as gasoline is. You know, people have kind of the choice to whether or not they want to take road trips and that, whereas diesel, it just kind of has to be burned in order for our economy to continue. And those numbers have been really strong. Demand hasn't really taken much of a hit.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen, I mean, the export market's kind of driving some of that as well though, right? But yeah, I mean, we haven't seen, and I mean, everybody knows S&P is just ripping higher, and AI, data centers, all those things are charging that diesel demand, you know, and keeping it alive to some degree. So anyways, I also think that looking forward too, the longer the Strait is closed, these SPR inventories, the longer we continue to drain these, it kind of raises the floor of oil prices over time as well. Because, I mean, obviously, if we have this problem for another 15 days to 30 days, SPR inventories are going to be getting close to tank bottoms, right? And at some point, nations are going to continue to look to refill those SPR inventories. They're not going to refill them at $90, $100 most likely. But if prices fall into the 80s again, low 80s, there's probably going to be some SPR buybacks and continuing to try to rebuild those inventories again, which is just going to naturally keep support under the market. So you look out on the curve on diesel, there's a ton of backwardation in place there. Same thing in WTI and Brent, and you know, you're seeing in the prices in the 80s there. So in my view, I mean, I think that if you were to lock in any prices there, not that they're not carrying risk, of course, but I just think the risk is skewed to the upside pretty significantly. With that being said, I think the SPR buybacks could be another layer of support in the market for the long term. And if the Strait were to close, I want to be upfront about this. There's going to be a significant knee-jerk reaction to the downside.
If the Strait were to reopen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Reopen, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, after the market kind of figures itself out and we start seeing those SPR buybacks, it should, in theory, kind of go back up and find some support.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to to make is that the pre-war status quo, in my opinion, does not seem achievable in any time, like in any time frame, honestly. I think a lot of the Middle Eastern producers are going to try and diversify away from the Strait as much as they possibly can. I think that initially, if the Strait were opened, there's still going to be some hesitancy of who's going to be the first one to send their ships through there, the insurance companies, who's going to be the ones, backing those. Ultimately, that's like a big part of the reason why some of these ships are not making the transits. And then, you throw in the risk of mines and whatnot. That's another question altogether there. Nobody really knows the extent of the mining there, but, there were reports that there are mines there, and whether that lane needs to be cleared or not, that's another question. And then going forward, is the Strait controlled by Iran? Are they taking tolls, or is it free just because Iran feels like they want to open it up for whatever reason that may be? Maybe they get some funds released. I don't know what it would be that kind of relinquishes the control of the Strait, whether that is just, the threat of more destruction. But either way, it just seems like it's not going back to the way it was. And so there's going to be kind of a premium in the market.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot of traders that just say, it's really hard to get length in this market because it just seems like there's so much noise within it. And I mean, in theory, the snap of the finger and then price can go back to $70. And that just like makes my skin crawl because I'm like, in the short term, absolutely. Like I said, I think that knee jerk reaction would be immediate. I mean, commodity markets are well known for having an overreaction in one direction or the other. But I tend to think like, I've got this backwardation in place. If you can go lock in $85 on WTI or, what that is on diesel, $350, somewhere in that ballpark. Not that I don't think the price can go back down. I mean, I definitely think that if the Strait opens, I just think that, a lot of people are having a little bit of recency bias on what happened with Russia, in 2022. And, they just, they kind of got burned by that. Right. And, everybody built up a ton of length in that case, and it kind of fell, on deaf ears to some degree. Whereas in this case, this is a actual fundamental stoppage of export. We've seen like it's clear as day. Whereas with Russia, it was sanctions related. So it was kind of I'm not going to call it
kind of like
tiger,
reshuffling of sorts as opposed to actual flow stoppages.
Right. So, those Russian barrels found new homes. This case, the flows are gone. They're just not there. So it's just a completely different issue, a completely different circumstance. And I don't know if I'm right on that, whether or not, there's like this trader mindset of like the psychology of getting burned, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But I don't know. There's probably some residue there that it's still lingering. And I just think this time's different. And, we follow Rory Johnston really closely, and he's been pretty much beating that drum pretty hard as well. I'm a huge fan of his content as well. I know you and I both are. So inventories are dropping fast globally. It's like we're seeing this actually happen this time, and that's why oil analysts all over the world right now are kind of hitting this red button harder than, the average consumer, in general.
And I think the fact that we have already worked off of these inventories alone is like, even if things were back to normal, you have less cushion in the market now than you did before. So thus you should have somewhat of a lower or a higher floor rather.
Yeah, not even factoring in I haven't even put any weight into the fact that I think, these fields that they've had to cap off, mm-hmm. like whether or not there's damage there.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know. So it's not like we can analyze that and tell you guys that that's like what we're seeing. We're just telling you the hard facts here. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not even in the discussion yet. And that is something that could happen, you know, that they could have trouble bringing that production back, as fast, you know, as everybody kind of might think they could.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you there. I think, though it's also, you don't want to be too overly, you know, concerned of like, yeah. oh, well, they're going to not be able to get this up and running. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, well, if the money's to be made and they're trying to recoup some of their losses, they might, you know, money is a good motivator for a lot of things. So I'm yeah. sure they could get some stuff done, but yeah, I mean, that's true. Some of these areas, you could see some permanent damage and, you know, things aren't, it's not like flipping on a light switch. So,
mm-hmm.
I think we're both kind of on the same page there, that it's just going to be a more of an elevated market. And even, I mean, I know that, you know, the backwardation is, you're definitely getting more value the further you go out. But people are still kind of hesitant to jump in on those prices. And really what you're seeing is reflected of that is a lot of the speculative length in WTI specifically is kind of like been on the sidelines a little bit more so. Brent's not the same case, but WTI for sure. And you're seeing, you just aren't seeing the jump back into the market. And so until we start seeing kind of a break and start seeing physical prices shoot back up like we did kind of the beginning and then in April, I think there was probably some panic buying initially, overreaction. But at some point,
end of May brought us back to where yeah. it was like a buying zone. It's like, it's been quick. And usually we're looking at these and analyzing stuff as a broader view. And it's like there's buying and selling zones like month to month almost, mm-hmm. or even, you know, quarterly to some degree. Whereas in this case, I'm like, it's changing every 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fast and harsh moves, which is why people are kind of just, and hedge funds, money managers on WTI haven't put their neck out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just sharp.
Yeah, it's hard to get too far extended one way or the other. But
yeah.
Yeah, so I think, though, we are headed for higher prices ahead, honestly. And it's hard to be completely short one way or the other. I think if you're thinking about from a consumption side of things, it's even though prices are high, there's still just plenty of upside risk there that it would be a wise or prudent decision to kind of, you know, think about having a portion of volumes locked in just for that up chance that, you know, this is prolonged, because I think everybody would have said after the first week or two that they thought this was going to be ended in a matter of a month at most. And now we're here at, I don't even know how many days now since February. Yeah. So March, April, May, 3 months, 90 days, 91 days. So mm-hmm. It's lasted a lot longer than we thought it could. And until you start seeing kind of either that the resolution to the conflict or demand destruction, you know, somehow knocking off 8 million barrels per day. It seems like prices are going to be heading higher.
Real resolution of the conflict, not just saying, we've got this.
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, ships flowing through. Like,
right, we got to see tangible, I mean, evidence that this is real. And that's been hard to find. So,
yeah. But at the risk of kind of repeating ourselves over and over, I think we've probably discussed enough for today's episode. I think we will kind of give some more updates as more information comes in. We try and be a lot more kind of backed by fundamentals, if at all possible. Mm-hmm. And so once we have, you know, the more data we have available, we're trying to share with everybody. And I think we're going to have kind of more of that input regarding, Chinese demand ahead. We're kind of working on some of that internally. So stay tuned and make sure to sign up for our market intelligence and listen to our continue listening to our podcast. And we're trying to put stuff out there on a daily, weekly basis on our market intelligence side of things and try and keep you all informed as we continue navigating through this crazy time. So
yeah, and if you look into for us to connect you to a diesel fuel distributor or whatever fuel you're needing, and you want to lock in your fuel cost and you'd like some assistance on just advising in that, feel free to reach out to us. We're well connected in that world, so we can set you up with the right people and make sure you get taken care of.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to the Focus on Fuels podcast with Trevor McClanahan and Alex Hodes, brought to you by StoneX, NASDAQ ticker SNEX, a global Fortune 100 financial services company with a century of commodities risk management experience. Subscribe to Focus on Fuels on your preferred podcasting platform. For insights on managing fuel and energy price volatility, and to sign up for the free StoneX Morning Energy Brief newsletter, email focusonfuels@stonex.com or visit www.stonex.com. Please feel free to rate, review, and share this episode with colleagues. Until next time.